whatever the case may be, we recommend having that tax strategy to minimize taxes that you pay. But even if you didn't, right? Like even if you didn't and you end up, this ends up pushing you into like the 32% tax bracket. And instead of giving getting 150K for your lump sum, you only get 100K. Well, if you get, again, you took that 100K and you invested it for the 23 years in this example, it's still going to grow to 1.2 million. 1.2 million still has a present value of 460,000. So you're still, your investment decision is still, do I want to give up $232,000 in value of monthly payments in order to get back 460,000? You're doubling your money with one signature on one form. The lump sum option should be an absolute no-brainer to take it 100% of the time. Welcome to Service and Wealth, the podcast dedicated to helping military personnel master their finances and achieve financial freedom. Our mission is to guide you through the ins and outs of planning, saving, and investing, and most importantly, how to balance savings so you can enjoy life now and retire with confidence. Welcome back to the Service and Wealth Podcast. I'm just frustrated. I'm coming in frustrated on this episode, and it's because it's only my fault, right? And that's something that I think we all learn in the military is accountability and responsibility. And that'll never, you know, maybe you had that before you came in. Maybe that was something that you had to learn from your seniors and your mentors and from the culture of being in uniform. And then there's something else that we learn. And what I was thinking is like that, you know, the stuff you learn and you develop because it's part of the culture. It's not just like, you know, it's not just a skill. Like somebody teaches you how to swing a hammer properly. And, you know, if you don't do it for a while, like you probably have to relearn it. You might relearn it, you know, with somebody showing you what you're forgetting or doing wrong. Or you might relearn it just because, like, you smash your hand a couple times and realize, oh, yep, I'm not looking the right place or holding the right, you know. Cultural things, like, they just stay in you, right? Like, it doesn't matter. That's why a lot of, you know, you hear a lot of old-timers saying, like, you know, it doesn't matter if you're in for 4 or 40, you're always, you know, for our culture, you know, you're always a Marine, right? And I don't think that ever goes and it ever leaves you because it's, like, part of the culture. Accountability, responsibility. And so you can't help it, even if it's like something that is small and doesn't matter. And you still kind of feel it, right? You still take it personally because, again, whether it's 4 years or 40, like for a long time in your life, like that was just part of the daily, the values and the virtues of you and everybody you were with. And whether you're, you know, an airman, a soldier, sailor, Marine, Coast Guardsman, you know, reservist, whatever, it sticks with you. And then there are other things that they're a little bit more of like the tools and the techniques, maybe tactics, techniques, procedures. But really, I think it's, you know, General Mattis was the one who came up with the best way to categorize some of these other things when he came up with this like 5-3-5 or quote unquote flat ass rules. And they talked about like habits of action and habits of thought. And we always really, you know, just especially in combat units, like you just drill that into yourself. Because if you don't do it every day, if you don't do the little things like checking to make sure that you've all of your, you know, all of your followers and springs and your magazines are oiled and moving freely, you know, then you could have a misfeed and a misfire on your weapon. And that's not good in combat, obviously. So you're always checking these little things. And one of the ways that we always talked about is like, you know, trust but verify, inspect for what you expect. In the Marine Corps, we had this thing called BAMSIS, and it was like your mission prep, and they talk about arranging for reconnaissance and making for reconnaissance, and then like you eventually, you supervise at the end, and all of these things go into like a process that you just do it. You start to finish the same thing all the time, check, recheck, and then it should be right. And so like, this is the third time I'm recording this episode, and I can't find the other two. And I think it's because like the first one I didn't really like. And then when I went to save, like I probably just like was like, yeah, whatever, I'll do it again later. So I didn't save it. And then I just went to record the next episode. And then either way, long story short is here I am the third time around on this episode, which is, you know, we can't leave it out. We can't skip it. So I couldn't just move on because we're talking about, we're wrapping up our month-long blog and podcast series on the blended retirement system, BRS, and like, excuse me, you know, like what you do with it when you are, what it means to you, and when you come in to the service and you put on the uniform and you start to get these benefits, how the BRS can actually really help you financially if you are taking advantage of it, right? You can't be proud or ignorant or whatever and say like, I don't really need this, or, you know, I'm halfway from where most of you, I think, are, you know, at the start of your careers. At least my hope is to reach all of, have the biggest part of our audience be the ones at the start of their careers, right? So then we can kind of like guide you through the journey. You're not going to fall behind because you weren't saving enough in the first years, or you're not going to miss up on great opportunities because you never understood like the importance of having cash and how you can, you know, for all of the apparently wise older folks in uniform out there who are like, hey, you know, cash is just losing value over time. It's like, no, it's not. It's only losing value if you have it in a 0.1% paying checking or savings account, right? We've got lots of cash. It's in a 5.25% APY high yield savings account. That is most definitely not losing value. It's making more than inflation is taking away value, and it's there for us for great opportunities when it comes up. And we don't have to do things that we used to do, which is we used to, when we wanted to buy a house, we had to sell a bunch of stock. And guess what? That's a taxable event. And so, you know, in order to sell $40,000 worth of stock, in order to get that cash to put a down payment on a house using a, you know, a low down payment loan, maybe a VA loan, well, you got to sell like, depending on how long you held it, $44,000, $45,000, $50,000 worth of stock, because you're going to owe $4,000, $5,000, $10,000 worth of, you know, federal income tax, and possibly even a state capital gains tax. I'm sorry, not federal income tax, federal capital gains tax, you know, or state capital gains tax on the sale. So, and moreover, now you have $40,000 or $50,000 that had been in the S&P 500 or maybe the NASDAQ, making you 8%, 10%, 12%, 14% per year. Now you don't have that investment anymore. Right. And so the mission of the Military Wealth Coach is to give you the information that you need to have like a complete and customized, totally customized personal financial plan. We like to call it PFP, personal financial plan. And we did that just because, again, we come from the military. So we're just conditioned to make up things and then put an acronym on it and then treat it like it's gospel. Right. So the PFP, that's your thing. That's what you're trying to build. You're trying to build it with cash, retirement, across the board. And in order to really max out the value of this PFP that you're going to build, you have to understand like all the tricks and the strategies and the tips, and especially those that come with the blended retirement system, because it throws a lot of things at you. Now, before we go on and jump into the content of this episode, which, you know, we're going to be going back and forth a little bit, and, you know, I'm just going to, because it's the third time through, and, like, at this point, it's like, well, I've got, like, 0 hours to get it done. I didn't quite have as much time to, like, prep math, to share math with you, but I've got a couple examples that we'll go into today when we talk about it. But I'm going to make a point of just trying to, like, give one or two examples, be very succinct, hammer home the point and then move on. Because I'm also aware, you know, the last couple went a little bit over an hour, and that's just because sometimes, I guess it's just a, you know, becomes a force of habit when you're, you know, grow up in the military to like kind of repeat yourself. And so there's another part of the culture that's still sticking with you after you take off the uniform and move on into the next chapter, right? Still kind of say things one or two times too many, and people are like, yes, I got it. Just move on. So I'm gonna try to remember to do that better. So before we get into it, I want to take this time to really also kind of work on my habits of thought, and up front in the episode, remind you that all of our content, from our blog posts to our podcasts, are available on, or all of it is available on our website, which is militarywealthcoach.com. That's www.militarywealthcoach.com. We're on all the social platforms. We've recently started posting again after taking a couple months off. And, you know, we took a couple months off just because, like, honestly, I didn't really know what I was doing and I wasn't very good at it. And so I needed to, like, kind of rethink things. And also, we, you know, when we got started with the social media marketing, we had, you know, our book, the book Service and Wealth, which you can buy or download on Amazon or the Kindle store. And we had like two blog posts, you know, and I'm like, hey, if you want to get smart on finance in the military, like head on over to my website and check out my blog and stuff. And it's like, there's two posts, right? So somebody in like 10 minutes would be like, well, yeah, that's good, but what else? So we, you know, we've taken a couple months off and we've built up, we're getting, you know, this is like episode 16. So I feel at this point, you know, we've got at least 15 hours of podcast content out there, and you should be able to spend at least 5 hours reading the book and the blog post. So as we, you know, we reference a few times, people have done some surveys and they found that if you had, you know, if you've had like just some financial education, that can translate into over six figures in additional wealth in your lifetime. And not just from like cradle to grave, but like by the time you're in the sort of like midlife, like where you're starting to count your dollars and you're starting to see like, oh my goodness, you know, in the next 20 years, I should be retiring. I've just spent 20 years working in the military, or 20 years in like combination of the military and something else, or something else and then the military. Like I'm like halfway there. How am I doing? What are the numbers show me? Am I up to speed? Am I going to make it? You know, and that's a really scary thing. And quite frankly, you know, we've kind of tapped around it before, but if you're coming into your early 40s and you don't have about $500,000 saved for retirement, you're not going to have enough. You have to put on the afterburners like right now and for the next 10 to 15 years, just be crushing it for retirement savings. And that means giving up some other stuff. But you can also catch up. You can catch up more quickly. And the blended retirement system will make that possible. And we'll talk about how today. So once again, the content's out there now. We've started to pick up the posting because we have more content. And we're trying to do a little bit more of a lo-fi personalized and relatable strategy to get the word out and try to grow an audience. And so you can help too, right? If you're listening to this, finding value in any of the content, please email, text, airdrop, whatever, to anyone and everyone who you know who this could help out. And while we talk specifically about military benefits and life situations and timelines, when it comes to the fundamentals of investing and planning, saving, withdrawing, things like that, the fundamentals apply to everybody. So, and, you know, obviously it's always at the forefront of my mind when I'm talking about this stuff to think of our family members and our spouses and our partners who don't wear the uniform, but they're still part of the military, right? Like they're still living that lifestyle. And so we have to make sure that we're providing content that, you know, if you wanted to, you know, just slide this over to maybe you've been dating somebody for like a year and a half and you're starting to get serious and talk about getting a dog. You could like share AirPods while you're at the park with your new puppy listening to the podcast, and it would be relatable and understandable, and, you know, it'd help you out. Or maybe you've been married for, you know, 10 or 12 years, and you're trying to get your financial house in order as the end of your career is coming up, and you have this 5-year plan of, like, transitioning, and you're trying to understand, like, where should we, what should our allocations be? Where should we have our money? What do we need in terms of insurance? How do we, you know, when should we set up our revocable living trust for our family? And we're gonna talk about that. You know, that's just as much finance as anything else. So we still have lots of content to come. And so, you know, please share it. That's the best way to get it. Like, phone a friend, circle of friends. When it comes to our products out there, I'm gonna figure out a way for our next book, when it comes out, to have like a referral code too. So if you buy the book, and, you know, like, if you buy it by a special referral link that I send out or something, you'll get a code. And then for every person who uses your code to buy a book, like, you'll get like a 25% off coupon or 50% off coupon. So you get two friends to buy the book, and then you get the book for free. So, you know, we're going to try to work on the network like that, and nothing's priced to make a profit. You know, the Military Wealth Coach was a nice tax write-off for me last year. It will be again this year, which is to say, it's truly a hobby. We're not making any money, but that's not the point. The goal is for it to be self-sustaining, that, you know, we could make a few thousand bucks a year, and then that would be enough to pay for the equipment or to hire a virtual assistant to do the audiovisual or the social media posting, and then everybody's happy, get the content. Nobody's getting ripped off, right? That's sort of the long-term business plan, which is not a good business plan, right? You should have a business plan designed to make money. And my plan is to just keep my head above water. Maybe I should rethink that. I don't know. Anyway, getting back to it, before we jump into the content today, remember that all investments and financial decisions come with risk, whether it's to put your money under the mattress or in a bank. There's even risk there. And so the content of this show is meant to be educational. It's supposed to help you become more familiar with key fundamentals and techniques and strategies. And we share stories, wins and losses. None of it should be construed as financial, tax, or legal advice. And if you're seeking that, then you would go hire somebody who's selling that. And, you know, I provide coaching, but that's something, you know, you can do. And if we're in a coaching session, you know, that'll come with like a sort of like a non-attribution agreement when we get started, where it's like, I'll tell you what I would do if I was you. If you do it, it's not because I told you, right? But yeah, so as always, do your own research, make your own decisions, and then accept the responsibility for what happens. All right. Finally, okay, this is, I think I just had to get off like the first third of the show. I'm always trying to like do the opener and like the relatability bit and kind of share a little bit what's going on. And this time I think I was just kind of like had to vent out some frustrations there about doing this a third time. And maybe I was also getting a little cocky, right? Like thinking, oh, I can just, now that I've accidentally deleted this episode twice and I'm doing it a third time, like I can just charge right through the content super clear, super fast, and we'll be in and out in a hurry. I guess we'll see. Okay, so the point of this final episode for our series on the blended retirement system is to talk about what to do when you separate or retire. And it's important to say that. And I think in the previous two takes, I just kept saying, like, when you retire. But the fact is that everybody gets a BRS. And so there are certain benefits within BRS that you have to actually make it to retirement and retire honorably to get, such as the monthly pension that you get for life, which we should call an annuity, but everybody calls it a pension. I'll use those terms interchangeably. And the lump sum option, that's the other big one that comes at your separation date when you retire. you can kind of say that, like, the career, the continuation pay applies to them because that's a 12 years. And if you're in for 12 and you take a chunk of cash to stay four more years and now you're in 16, like, I feel like you're pretty much in it till 20. You know, especially, I think last week we just kind of shared, you know, if you're an 05, yeah, we definitely talked about it. You know, if you're an E8 getting out and you're going to get a, you know, like a $3,000 a month or $2,500 a month pension. Yeah, $2,500 a month pension. Or you're an 05 who's going to retire and get a $4,000 a month pension. You know, in those cases, we're talking about like $700,000 to $1 million worth of value just from those monthly pension payments, right? Because, in fact, it's actually like up to 1.2. It's like 800 to 1.2. So on average, it's $1 million. That's like the gift that you get from the military for sticking around for 20 and retiring. So I was one of those guys who for a long time was like, I wouldn't stay in just to retire for the pension. It's not worth it. Like, that's stupid. And then, like, one day I did the math. I was like, oh, well, like, this getting out at 14 years and missing out on retirement, that would be, it's not quite financial suicide, but you're definitely like shooting yourself in both feet, you know? And so, anyways, there are those kind of benefits that are unique to somebody retiring, but then there's still the same common question for every single person in uniform who has the BRS, which is like, what do I do with my thrift savings plan? I've got money in there. I have my own money. I have money that the government gave me. If, you know, last week's episode or the blog post from this week, I think it was this week, you know, on how to do the Roth backdoor conversion, if that came too late for you and you still have money in your traditional TSP, well, it's never too late to do a conversion, but no matter what, like, you're going to have a choice of like, do I take all my money out of the TSP or do I keep my TSP open? Do I keep all my money in the TSP? What do I do? And so everybody has to confront at least that question. So we're going to cover all those today. And I think if I recall correctly, I ended the previous episode saying we were going to talk about, what to do with your TSP when you get out and or retire, and we're going to talk about the lump sum option. And so that's going to be the focus today. Before getting to that, I definitely, in at least one, if not both, of the deleted episodes, had made a quick kind of like correction or maybe just an update or addition to what I should have talked about in part 2 of 3, which was about what to do, how to manage the BRS while you're in uniform. And that has to do with the vesting period. And again, we just want to make sure that we understand these words and definitions. Vesting is basically buy-in. And your company's set aside this program where they're going to give you more money to help you save for retirement. And they don't want to do that for everybody because they know not everybody's going to stick around. Not everybody's going to work out. Some people are going to, you know, finish boot camp with double stress fractures in their tibias, and they're going to get med boarded out. Some are going to get through boot camp or commission, and then they're going to get assigned to a job specialty that requires like a slightly higher security clearance, and they're going to put in there. I'm so happy I can't even remember the name of the form, the SF, like, whatever. I've forgotten. This is so great. I can't believe I'm starting to forget silly little things from the military. but you know, they're going to do a security background check on you for your higher clearance or so, you know, a special clearance. And they're going to find something and they'll be like, you did not disclose this on your, you know, eligibility. And you're actually being arrested for, you know, felony distribution of puppies. Like, that's disqualifying. Sorry, we got to kick you out, you know, like. And so they basically have like a 60 day and a 24 month or 2 year vesting, graduated vesting schedule. And so the first 60 days after you are officially part of the military, You are not vested at all. You don't even have, you're not even registered with Thrift Savings Plan. You can't even open a TSP account and set it up online, right? Like nothing's happening for 60 days. And then after 60 days, it kicks in and you can open your TSP and you can start having your payroll deductions taken out by MyPay and put in. And your service is actually going to just automatically start you at like 5%. So those will start coming out. And then after 24 months, after 2 years, and the way they put it in the wording is like on the first day of your 25th month of service. Like, right? Like that's how I feel about that wording. Like just say after 2 years. Then you finally are fully vested. So in between 60 days and 2 years, you're only partially vested. You only get a 1% match to your savings, to your TSP. But then after 24 months, you get the full 5% matching for the BRS. And you get auto-enrolled by your service every year. If you opt out, they're just going to put you back in. And it's a lot like, you know, the SGLI, your service members group life insurance. These are things that like every time you, every year, every, you do like your audit or you PCS someplace, come to a new unit, like they're checking all this paperwork all the time. And you may think, as I once did, like I'm told I'm invincible. I'm told nothing's going to happen to me. I also don't plan to live that long. So I want all my cash. I don't want to pay for any life insurance. I don't want to make any retirement savings. I just want all my cash right now to go like buy stuff for my truck and like ammo for my guns. Right. And that's probably not super relatable, across all the service branches, but I feel like, you know, in the Marine Corps, that's still pretty relatable. I don't think we stopped just being, you know, a little bit country like that, but anyway, this is my way of just saying, looking back as like an older dude, if every year you're being asked, like, are you sure you shouldn't do this? That's like the foot stopping moment. You know, that's like when your gunny or your chief or the tech sergeant or whoever, you know, like that staff NCO who's been around the block and seen things, he's like, are you sure you want to do that? You're like, wait, you're trying to tell me something I should or should not, you know. So don't opt out. But if you do, they're going to opt you back in, and then you're going to have to opt out next year and back in and back out. So anyway, that I feel is an important thing to note because I have had a couple messages come across of like, hey, I just graduated OCS and I've finally commissioned and I can't set up my TSP. And you're like, you told me like on your podcast, I should set it up right away. I'm like, yep, I did not have the details right. So hopefully we got that sorted, and we can move on now to fast forward for 4 years, right? Like now you're at the end of your first enlistment or your officer's contract and you're like getting out and you're looking at your TSP and, you know, if you followed along with the plan that we recommend in terms of the monthly contributions, you know, you should be doing really quite well in terms of your savings, your TSP portfolio. Now, what I want to point out is I haven't published these charts that I'm referencing yet, but these are going to come out in the Ultimate Military Retirement Plan, our next book. And just so like, if you're listening and if you're wondering, because I just talked about the vesting schedule, I did that math, right? So like, if you look at the enlisted and the officer, you know, investment plans, like they're very small in terms of the employer match in the first 1 and 2 years, because you're getting 1% for 10 months and then you're getting 1% for 12 months. You're not getting 5% the whole time. So we've already built that math into these charts and these tables and the numbers. And when we tell you like follow the savings plan for 20 years and you've got it made, that's already built in there. But if you just did like the, you know, I'm just going to let the 5% flow into my account and it's going to be sort of what I call like the one and done approach, So you did 4 years, you got the, you put 5% in, you got the matching. When you separate after 4 years, and if you're enlisted, you know, you might be 22 years old, and you should have at least $10,000 in your TSP. And if you never did a backdoor Roth conversion, you know, you could expect about $1,200 or $1,300 to be in the traditional TSP, and then, you know, the remaining like $8,500, $9,000 to be in the Roth from, and this is your contributions, and then the investment returns and growth on it. You know, if you're an officer, it would be a bit more, obviously, because 5% of your pay is a bit more. Let me see if I got that one. It's not important if I do. But then, so what we can say is kind of like on the low end of this, the range is $10,000 in your TSP, and you've got to make a decision about what to do with it. Now, if you were following along and you were doing sort of our recommended about $575 a month, you and you're an officer, you're going to have closer to $40,000 in there because the match is considerably higher. And, you know, if you're enlisted, you should have somewhere around $30,000 to $35,000. So you have, you know, you're both putting in about just under $7,000 in a year into your retirement savings account. And then you're adding on top of it the match and then the investment returns. So from as you could be leaving after 4 years in uniform with as little as 10 and maybe as much as 40. If you, as an officer, if you like were just sleeping in your car that you didn't have payments on and biking to work from your car instead of driving your car to work, and you were somehow maxing out your total contributions, you know, you might have like $125,000 in there. But for our purposes, we're going to assume you're leaving after 4 years and you've got like plus or minus $25,000 or $30,000 in there, and you got to do something. Now, if you're retiring after 20 and you followed the flight path that we put together, or you know you did, and it'll be again, this is already in the appendix for the book, is like a catch up flight plan. So if you're behind, like how do you catch up and make sure you get onto the right checkpoint in your retirement savings journey? And the goal is, whether you're officer or enlisted, the goal is when you're 42, like in your 42nd year of life, you have over $500,000 in your retirement savings. Now, if you're an officer, that means like in your 20th year of in uniform is probably when you need to like hit that. So you're kind of working towards it the whole time. If you're enlisted, typical enlisted, you know, you retire after 20 years and you're only like 38 or 39 or 40 because you went in after high school. You only need to get to about 400 to 420,000. And then you've got like the next 3 years when your investment returns are going to add another 100 plus thousand to it. And so, you know, that is, all that is to say is that like if you're enlisted retiring and you're under 40, you should have like 400,000 in there. If you're an officer retiring, you should be looking at 500,000 at the same time that you're like getting your DD-214. But you're in your early 40s, and you also have the question of what to do with that money. Even if you have, yes, you have more, but you still have the same accounts as the person getting out after 4 years. And so here's the real simple answer, and this is what everybody should do. You keep your TSP accounts open. And that's it. You keep it open. So long as you have $200 in your Roth will stay open. They can't close it on you. If you have fewer than $200 in that Roth, TSP will close it and send you a check. So ideally, you don't want to like have $200 sitting there in, you know, in like the S fund, because you can lose 30% next year. So you want to have at least a couple $100, and you want to have it in like a fairly low volatility. So this would be like the one time that the G fund makes sense, because you're just trying to keep your money in the account. You're keeping your account open, and the same with the traditional. So, and that's it. And the reason why you keep your TSP is there's really three reasons. So the first reason is that the C Fund is a really good fund. The C Fund keeps up with all of the other top performing index S&P 500 funds out there that are offered by the big brokerages, you know, the Vanguards and the Invescos, the Fidelity. All of those different brokerages have their own version of an index S&P 500, but they all have the same mission, which means they all have basically the same returns. Now, we've already talked about multiple times on the show how in order to get your money to double on a reliable schedule and keep ahead of inflation with the doublings so that you can be a multimillionaire in your 60s, you need to keep your money invested in the S&P 500. If you start investing in bonds and G funds and like all that stuff and you pull down your returns to 7%, 6%, 5%, if you're in the life cycle funds over the course of 40 years average just over 5%. So they're total garbage and you're never going to get to your goals with those. Instead of having 2.5 million, you know, on your 60th birthday, you're going to have 1.2 million, right? You're not even going to be halfway there because the life cycle funds are such, you know, such poor performing strategies, which we're going to give them a whole show in which we just break down why they're terrible. And I look forward to that because I hate them and I want everybody to stop investing in them and also to be aware, because if you don't do anything, TSP is just automatically going to sign you up for their whatever life cycle fund they think you should have, which is basically meaning they don't care about you and don't have your best interest in heart, because over 30 to 40 years, the only way to become wealthy in retirement is to invest in the stock market and not some ridiculously poor performing bespoke life cycle funds built on other bespoke poor performing things like the F fund or the G fund, right? So anyway, all of that is to say that in order to reach your financial goals, you need to invest in an S&P index fund, and you've got a great one in the C fund, and it's cheap. It has a 0.054% expense ratio that compares very favorably with others. So, you know, if you wanted to, if you had a, you know, a Roth IRA that you were investing in Vanguard's S&P 500 index fund, VTSAX, which is slightly cheaper, you know, it's like 0.03 or something. I'm going to actually look that up. I should know. 0.04, sorry, 0.04%, right? So it's 0.04 versus 0.054. Who cares, right? Like at 0.01%, you're not going to be like on $1 million, you're talking about like $1,000. So if you're really a penny pincher, sure, go ahead and roll over your C fund out of the TSP into your Roth IRA and buy VTSAX, and that'll be great. But since you probably only have like a couple $100,000, we're only talking about, you know, $20 or $30. So is it really worth your time? I don't know. You make the decision. But because you have this C fund and because it's cheap, there's not a lot of better options out there. And what do I mean by that? Well, just because, so it's a qualified retirement plan. It's an employer-sponsored qualifying retirement plan. And if you want to move that money around to invest in things, it has to go into other qualified plans. If it doesn't, it's considered a distribution. You can't just take it and put it in your Robinhood, because now TSP is going to send a form, a 1099-R, to the IRS, and it's going to say, hey, you know, Colonel so-and-so or Master Chief so-and-so or Sergeant so-and-so took $20,000 or $200,000 out of their TSP and they moved it. And then on your tax return, you're going to be like, oh, yep, I did take that out. I did not put it into another 401k or IRA. And the IRS is going to say thank you, because now they're going to tax you and charge you a 10% penalty. So it's always got to go into a qualified plan. An IRA, that's pretty easy. You're in charge and you can buy low-cost index funds through your brokerages. But if you have a second career that offers a 401k or 403b or other employer-sponsored plan, you could get really unlucky. And a very personal example was when my wife left one position and she got a job with a hospital, and their 403B plan was administered by Transamerica. And the fee schedule on their S&P 500 mutual fund was 1.25%. So that's 25 times more expensive. And if, you know, for her plan, if she's going to have $2.5 million, that additional 1% fee per year over the next, you know, 20, 25 years would add up to several hundred thousand dollars, right? And so if you go on to another career, and it doesn't have to be the first one after the military, it could be the second or the third, and they have only have it more expensive options that you can invest in their retirement plans, well, you don't want to invest there. You want to still have access to these TSP funds because they're cheaper and they perform just as well, if not better. And you can do that. And simply what you do is, you know, you with your new job, you put in your 6, 11, 15% of your income that you want to save for retirement. They give you the match. And then when that money goes in there at the end of the year in December, just, you know, set a reminder on your phone for like the last work day before Christmas to, or maybe back it up a little bit more, right? Like maybe start it when your kids start, you know, the countdown for the 12 days of Christmas, or if you're a pagan, you know, do it before the solstice or whatever. It doesn't matter. Passover, just request a rollover out and have all the money transferred from that plan back into your TSP. And TSP will take it, and then you can invest it in the C fund, and you can build a balance, and you can get the returns for the cheap, very low expense ratio, right? So that's sort of the first two of the three reasons. One, it's got everything you need, and it's fairly cheap. Two, you can put money back into it from other retirement plans if they don't have good options for you, so you're not forced to pay those high fees. And then the third is what happens with what the IRS calls the rule of 55. And they also have a thing called the rule of 50. And we address these on the blog, so you can read a little bit more about them. But everybody talks about how you can't withdraw from your retirement funds before the age of 59 and a half without a penalty. But the IRS has put two special like escape clauses in the Internal Revenue Code. The rule of 55 says that if you retire in the year that you're 55, that you can actually start taking it early without a penalty. But the catch is that your plan has to subscribe to that. And not a lot of plans do, because a lot of the plans, as we've said before, they're charging like 1% fees. They don't want to let you get your money out 5 years earlier, because that's when they're going to collect the most fees. You know, if you have $2.5 million in there, they're going to make what, $25,000 a year in fees on that account over 5 years. So you're costing them six figures if you start early. But the TSP is a plan for federal employees. And since the IRS is a federal agency, they're kind of like, well, we can't really say no to this. And so the TSP is one of those plans that says we will honor the rule of 55, which means if you've been saving and crushing it in your TSP and you're 55 and you retire that year, you've been working continuously and you retire at age 55, you can say, hey, TSP, I invoke the rule of 55, and they will let you start taking out money to live your retirement, and you won't have to pay taxes or penalties. And then also the rule of 50. And the rule of 50, it's the same thing as a 55, except the only way you can, you know, take advantage of that is if when you retire in your 50th year, it's also at least 25 years as a public safety employee. So that can be in the military, it can be in the Border Patrol, it can be the FBI, it can be other agencies like that. Not every federal job qualifies. So if you're like if you're like a GS contract specialist for DARPA, like you don't qualify. But and so that's like the third major reason why you keep your TSP and you make sure you always have at least $200 in each of the Roth and the traditionals, so they stay open. You keep those investment options, the rollover in options available to you. And then you also keep this sort of window open to like potentially a penalty in tax-free early retirement. All right. So that brings us to the big topic of the day, the final big topic of our series on how to manage your blended retirement system. And admittedly, this is now getting back towards just our retirees. So, you know, that's historically, that's about 1 in 6, not quite 1 in 5 folks in uniform makes it to retirement. But hey, look, you know, we've got 1 million folks in uniform. So that means, in theory, there's, you know, at least 160,000 of you out there for whom this next topic is super important. And there's another 1 million of Americans who are serving in the reserves and the guard. And so, in theory, it's a lot easier for you to, like, keep earning points and keep serving. You know, you're not forced into, like, this, you know, monolithic military, you know, lifestyle. You have, like, your life and then your guard and reserve life. And so, in theory, you would make it all the way through to the end to earning that retirement. And when you do get to that point, you get this huge question under BRS that never happened before. And again, this is why, you know, like, it's crazy to think about, but, like, if you were an officer and you just, like, commissioned and you went 20 years and you did not even think about saving for retirement or anything else financially, and then you retired after 20 years, you were still going to get $5,000 a month indexed to inflation for the rest of your life, $60,000 a year. It, like, that goes a long ways to, like, financial independence and financial freedom. If you served an enlisted career, that number is smaller, but, you know, maybe you decide to, like, stick it out till 24 or 25 years and get a few more pay bumps and, you know, lock in a good pension with that. You know, you could kind of go 20 years without thinking about it. And under BRS, you can't. You got to think about it at multiple points. You got to think about it each year, what to do with your, as we talked about last week, with the traditional matching contributions and the returns they earn, as well as the traditional contributions you're going to make when it makes sense for your tax bracket and can save you on taxes. Or when the timing makes sense, that, you know, you have a deployment coming up next year or the year after, so you can save money on taxes with the traditional contribution now. And then when you're deployed, do the rollover and either pay, you know, little or no taxes on that and essentially get, like, free money. And then you got continuation pay question at 12 years, what to do. And then you've got this lump sum option question to do at 20. Now, if you just listen to the counselors at the transition assistance programs or transition readiness services, if you go over to your community services office and talk to a counselor there, heck, if you even go to, like, the blended retirement system website, or in this case, you can go onto, like, USAA, and they have, you know, the Department of Defense, like, they all have these websites where, like, should I take the lump sum? And then they show you these graphs, and the graphs are dishonest, to say the best, all right? And basically what they do is they show you, like, don't take the lump sum. And they show you why, and they say, well, you're sacrificing a ton of value. One example that we looked at here was, I made up two people. Who was this one? Okay, I made up an 05 retiring under the BRS. So they were looking at a $4,000 monthly pension, and $4,000, you know, according to this BRS calculator from USAA, they're like, you're going to get $4,000 retired pay every month. And by the age 67, so this is assuming this person was retiring at age 44. All right. So they had 23 years, you know, and they're retiring in 2025. So not quite realistic yet, because pretty much any 05 retiring in 2025 is still in a legacy system. But anyway, they're just numbers. Just stick with me. They say, okay, well, if you're going to get a total of $1,521,100 in payments between now and age 67, if you take this 25% lump sum, you'll get $147,600 right now, like within 2 months of getting out. You're going to get a check for $150,000. But that's going to take your monthly retired pay down to $3,000. And when you add all that up, your total that you're going to get by age 67 is only 1.28 million. So you're giving up $232,700 in value. And it would be double that if you took the 50% lump sum. And so they're basically what they're saying is they're like saying, don't do it, right? Don't do it. You're giving up all this money. This is a bad decision. And the reason why they say through 67 is because no matter what, when you turn 67, they have to give you your full pension, monthly pay, monthly retired pay again. And so really you're only making a decision that's a short-term one relative to your whole life. I guess 25 years is not that short, but here's the problem is, one, they're not taking into account taxes. And so the actual spread on the total value of the monthly retired pay is smaller because you're going to pay at least 25% less in taxes. So you know, like there's that much. But then they're also not looking at what you would do with that lump sum. They're just assuming you're going to get it and you're going to go to Vegas and you're going to lose it all. Or you're going to buy a powerboat and like a brand new diesel truck to pull it. And then eventually it's going to be worth zero. But you're smarter than that, right? And this is why it's dumb. Well, there's two reasons why it's dumb. The first is that they couldn't be any more transparent. And if there's, you know, if there, I don't even know what the number is. There's 160,000 leaving the service every year. Let's assume one in six of those is actually a retiree. So if there's literally like 25,000 or 30,000 service members retiring every, we'll call it 30,000 every year retire, and they take the lump sum, and let's just assume that they only get $100,000. Well, that's like $3 billion in cash that the DOD, that MyPay would have to come up with to pay you, to pay all of us. Like 30,000 of us are just like lined up outside the Pentagon being like, hey, we just retired. We want our lump sum. We want $100K. They're like, we don't have $3 billion, dudes. So that's one of the reasons why, like, it's definitely dishonest and misleading. And the second is because, you know, you're smarter than that. You already know that, like, taking this money out can be life-changing because you can invest it, right? Now, let's say that if we go back to this and you took out that $147,600, and right now we're just going to ignore taxes, right? We're just going to say you actually got to keep all of that. And you just put it straight away into a S&P 500 for the next 23 years until you're 67. So over the time you gave up, according to them, you gave up $232,000 worth of value because you took the lower monthly payments. But if you took your lump sum and invested it, it would grow to $1.75 million. Now we have to discount that because that's $1.75 million in 23 years, which is really nice. But if we want to compare on like the effect that that has on the value of our BRS and our lump sum option and our total compensation, retirement compensation option, we have to put inflation back into it and a discount rate and bring it back to today's value. And if we do that in today's dollars, that 1.75 million is worth 670,000. So in this example, you're essentially saying I'm going to give up to get $147,000 today, that's going to have a value, I'm actually getting a value of $671,000. And they're trying to tell you that's a bad deal. Now, if we even, you know, essentially when you take it that way and the reduced pension payments, instead of being $232,000 worse off than just taking the monthly retired pay and skipping the lump sum option, you're actually $438,000 better off. It turns the value of your retirement from a $1.5 million to a $2 million retirement. Now, of course, you got to take taxes into account because when you take the lump sum, you know, you have the option to take it all at once or in installments up to either one, two, three, or four installments per year. One per year for up to 4 years. So you can say, I want my 147 divided up 50K a year for 3 years, or, you know, 37,500 per year for 4 years, whatever. And that might help you to reduce the taxes. So that could be a smart way to do it. You know, if you have a tax, with all these things I recommend, you have a tax strategy where you're making a large investment in like real estate or, you know, an airplane that you can lease back to a flight school or to a private flying company. Because you can, I mean, you can buy like a $1.8 million aircraft with 10% down and you can get all the tax advantages in the world, right? And so you could take that 50% lump sum and pay zero tax on it, right? Just buy an airplane, you know, or a fleet of box trucks that you're renting out on Turo in military communities to families that need them for moving. Whatever the case may be, we recommend having that tax strategy to minimize taxes that you pay. But even if you didn't, right? Like even if you didn't and you end up, this ends up pushing you into like the 32% tax bracket. And instead of giving getting 150K for your lump sum, you only get 100K. Well, if you get, again, you took that 100K and you invested it for the 23 years in this example, it's still going to grow to 1.2 million. 1.2 million still has a present value of 460,000. So you're still, your investment decision is still, do I want to give up $232,000 in value of monthly payments in order to get back 460,000? You're still, you're doubling your money with one signature on one form. The lump sum option should be an absolute no-brainer to take it 100% of the time. And even if, right, like nobody wants to pay taxes and you should have a strategy. You should make investments. You shouldn't just squander it on yourself. You have to invest the money that you keep and you'll keep more of it to invest. If you, you know, buy real estate, buy, start a business, buy capital equipment, buy rental vehicles, buy a rental aircraft. I know that stuff sounds big and it sounds, you know, maybe strange or uncomfortable, but like just go down to the country club, you know, with like a $60,000 a year membership due and start sitting down and talking to all the, you know, the wealthy people there and ask them what they do. And they're like, oh yeah, well I own this neighborhood and that laundromat and I have a fleet of, you know, construction equipment that I lease out to contractors, you know, all those little bobcats you see being hauled around on trailers by landscapers. I own all those. I lease them out and that's, I get the tax benefits of buying capital equipment and the deductions. And then I lease it out and I make enough money to make all my payments and have profits. You know, it's just the way to manage your finances, and the smart thing to do. And when it comes to the lump sum option, you know, we go into this a bit more, in the blog. So you can like look at the charts and look at the colors and look at the numbers and see how it all works out. But what it comes down to is you just need like the year you're going to retire, you Google BRS lump sum discount rate. And the first result is going to be a PDF of the Department of Defense memo that says what the lump sum discount rate is going to be for the year you're retiring. And for 2025, the rate happens to be 6.33%. So all you have to do is find an investment that does better than 6.33%. And that's easy, right? We, you know, even if you just, as we said, just dump it in the S&P 500, that the nominal return or unadjusted return on that is 10.8% per year. Adjusted for inflation, it's still 8%, right? So any time that you can get money at one interest rate and invest it and make a higher interest rate, you get to keep the spread. That's how banks became so rich, right? You put your money in there, they pay you out 0.1%, and then they lend it out to businesses and consumers, and they charge them 5, 8, 10, 15%, and they keep the spread, right? It's how bookies make their money, right? Like, it's just the way to think about it. So when you come up on retirement, check out what that discount rate is. Ask yourself how easily you could find investment options that make you more money. And that's why, you know, what we say is when we look at these numbers and USAA or BRS or Navy Fed and their calculators, they show you like, oh, you're going to be $232,000 less off. It's not the case because you're going to invest that money and you're going to be at least $230,000 better off, maybe more. You know, all you have to do is be like a really shrewd investor who reinvests profits and buys more investments. And the next thing you know, in 23 years, you've got 5 million or 10 million bucks, right? The lump sum is an absolute gift. It is a golden ticket. It can be your fast track to the lifestyle you want. If you're behind on retirement savings, you know, if you've only got like a quarter $250,000 in your TSP and you're retiring, consider taking the lump sum and like dumping it into your retirement account, right? And it will catch up and it will more than make up for any amount of lost monthly pension between now and age 67. And finally, one of the things to consider, and this is just kind of sharing a personal strategy, which was looking at the even bigger lump sum, right? And so in this case, again, this is just using our hypothetical 05, retiring in 2025 with a $4,000 monthly retired pay. Taking the 50% lump sum would be a payout of $295,200. That's serious tax considerations, right? Like when you get that on top of whatever else you were earning, that's going to push you definitely into the 24% bracket and quite possibly in the 32% bracket. If you're single, that's probably going to push you into the 35% tax bracket, right? So like you, that's serious money that the IRS could be taking. If you're single and you're in 35% tax bracket and you get $300,000, the IRS is going to keep $105,000, right? So like you definitely want to tax strategize. But our personal strategy was to go max lump sum and divvy it up, right? And again, you can take depreciation deductions and business write-offs on purchasing vehicles over 6,000 pounds. So you can, let me divide that up real quick before we wrap this up, is you can take depreciation on all of the property. So you can buy something with 5% down, like buy an investment property for $200,000, put 5% down, and you can claim depreciation on the whole $200,000. You don't have to limit it to how much you put in there. Same goes with buying or leasing vehicles or capital equipment, right? And like the annual limit, I think is for 2024. I think in 2025, I think it's like 1.2 or 1.3 million in total capital expenditures and like heavy vehicle equipment that you can claim as a loss, and you don't have to pay for it cash. So you could buy an aircraft. You could put 10% down on a $500,000, Cessna or Piper Cub. I don't even know. I don't know those kind of airplanes, but like one that you could just lease back to a flight school, or like, a hobby club that has responsible licensed aviators. They just need an aircraft to fly, but they can't afford one. You could put like 50 down, finance the rest, and then you could claim the whole thing as a deduction, write-off for your vehicle equipment leasing business, and that'll offset the entire lump sum, right? And so now instead of giving $105,000, or maybe you're married and you're only paying 24% tax bracket, that's still $75,000 that you could keep by having a good tax strategy. And so, without going into too many specifics, like the tax strategy we had was to take the full lump sum, like the 50%. Take a third of it and invest in capital equipment that would provide enough deductions and business expenses, capital equipment expenses, to offset the entire lump sum. So we would not owe any tax on it, which means we would keep like the full amount. And again, in this example, that's the difference between keeping like 225 and 300. So we put like $100,000 to that, put $100,000 into income producing rental properties that are going to cash flow about $1,500 a month, so almost totally making up the pension that you give up. And then the other third uses a down payment on a home that we would live in, right? So now you've taken this lump sum, and by having a smart tax strategy, you get to keep all of it. And then by splitting it up, you get to invest it in a way that will grow and grow and grow to make you a multimillionaire in the future. You have another asset or two that you bought that pays you income now to make up for what you gave up in your pension. So now your cash flow is almost exactly the same. It could be better. It could be a little worse, but like your cash flow isn't actually messed up like they say it'll be. And then you also get to enjoy some of it right now. And that's what, this is having a smart personal financial plan is all about. That's when we talk about the ultimate retirement plan. That's what we talk about, is you can invest your money to become as wealthy as you want to be in the future, but still have some to enjoy today. All right, so look at me. I'm breaking promises all over the place. Again, at the beginning of the show, I was like, I bet you I can just ramble on a little bit and talk about some military stuff, and we'll be fine because I'll talk through this quickly. But I didn't. I'm not gonna feel guilt about that. We'll call it. It is what it is. My goal today was to convince every single one of you who's going to retire from the military under BRS to take the lump sum option. And, you know, maybe I convinced some of you out there who are just exceptional Americans, super, super fine professionals and extremely talented and competent in your work, and who are looking across the fence and thinking that turf over there is greener than what you got on your side, and helping you to realize that the cost of replacing the military pension, especially when you include the BRS lump sum. You know, I just gave you an example of how taking a lump sum payment can have can make your retirement option, not even including your TSP, but just your pension and lump sum together, can have a present value of $2 million in your 40s, right? You're going to have to save a lot of money if you leave the military and spend 15 years working on the privates in the private sector. I mean, you're going to have to save like $80,000, $90,000 per year if you want to get up to that same level of wealth by your mid-40s. So it's probably not... The math is too mathy and the concepts are too concepty to like really be a good recruiting and retention tool. But, you know, every time I look at it, I'm like, there's no excuse for anyone who's in the military to not be able to, you know, make it a career and have total financial freedom in their 40s. You know, it's insane. So anyway, we're coming back next month here in October. We're going to hit up a couple more fun topics. You know, some pop culture stuff that we had a request come in for from Instagram. And then I also decided I really want to talk about what's called the 4% rule. If you've heard of it, you'll probably be like, yeah, I want to know about that too, because I don't understand. I hear people talk about it all the time. If you haven't heard of it before, tune in, because I'm going to blow your mind, because I've done all the math, and it's the 4% rule is like, it's as safe as it's ever been, if not safer than it's ever been presented. Essentially, like, anything that was created last century, you got to understand is like, we got to update it. And so I'm going to talk about it, but then I'm also going to update it and show you the numbers behind why you need to think of things differently when you're planning for your retirement. All right, definitely went past an hour. I don't know what the time is, where the clocks are, but I'm definitely over an hour again. But I think next week we come back and we dip back under the hour, right? So, or at least that'll be the goal. Well, thanks again for tuning in. I hope that I succeeded in my mission to convince you about the lump sum, and if nothing else, give you the information you need to know to keep your TSP open, keep at least $200 in there safely, give yourself some margin in case it goes down from a bad month or a quarter in the markets, and that you can move money from other retirement plans back into your TSP later if you want, so that you can always get the best investment choices for your retirement savings and pay the lowest fees, you know, from all the options available. If you have one that you can do for free, obviously do it for free, but it's hard to beat the C fund and TSP. All right. Hope you all have a good week. We'll talk to you next Sunday with our next episode. And until then, stay financially fit and mission ready.